And welcome back to Relatively Football League Cup Final Reaction Special, your Sunday sit down, your summary. Everyone's a winner, baby, and that's the truth. My name is Theodoid Hughes, and I'm here with my sister, Flo. How's it going, Flo? Straight from Vicarage Road.
Yeah, a fantastic day. Feeling a bit exhausted, but it was great to be there and great to see so many familiar faces from the women's football crew, people that haven't really seen in one place for a very long time for obvious reasons, seeing them on press conferences and a few people at games that, you know, we've all been split around a little bit this season, but great to see
football
everyone together
mafia,
and say hello in the flesh. And
I love it.
Amazing to see such an incredible pitch. Watford were fantastic.
Let's just talk about the grass.
Hot and cold drinks. Parking, which is, you know, essential when you're doing behind closed doors football, and probably the best bit about behind closed doors football. And unbelievable pitch. I don't know how the ground staff have been able to keep it in such good condition with that amount of football being played. It is amazing. I mean, especially the demands of the Championship season has been ridiculous with so many games happening. When you look at the quality of the pitches in the Premier League and the Championship, they don't even come close to that, up and down the pyramid, really. Amazing pitch today, so hats off to those guys.
Well, turning from an exceptional match day experience to the game itself, sadly, we weren't quite delivered the competitive cup final maybe we all wanted, and we certainly weren't delivered a Bristol City upset or Bristol City running Chelsea close. And the League Cup final for the women ended Bristol City 0, Chelsea 6. Sam Kerr hat-trick, absolutely fabulous, 2 goals after 10 minutes. Fran Kirby getting involved in the action as well, and Gura Wrighton with a goal in there as well in the second half. Flo, it was total domination right from the kickoff, which I think was sad for people like you who confided in me and said that you were running a narrative that maybe Bristol could upset. And I think it was maybe a bit upsetting for this big occasion, like you said, that was perfectly set for the neutral to try and enjoy the game. But on the other hand, Chelsea were so fabulous, and especially Sam Kerr and Fran Kirby, that I think once again you kind of sit back, you know, even that first goal 90 seconds in or whatever, we are witnessing such a fantastic team that now are well set to maybe even do the quadruple this year if you include the Champions League. And yeah, you kind of being there, did you feel like you were in the presence of all-time greatness?
All in all, I thought, you know, Chelsea did blow away Bristol City. I was probably one of the few people that gave Bristol City a hope today.
I appreciate you for thinking that. I loved hearing your thoughts.
Maybe a bit naively, I really thought that they were going to have a chance at upsetting things. I just thought the maternity Matt Beard could bring something special, and the spirit that he's instilled in his team was going to be enough to make life difficult. But clearly, looking at the results that Bristol City have had against Chelsea in recent seasons, and this season especially, it was always going to be an uphill battle. I think Bristol City have shown this season that although they've got results, they still really do struggle to keep clean sheets. I think they've had one clean sheet all season for Sophie Bagley, and it's just been, yeah, it's been a struggle defensively to be organised, to be robust, and to, yeah, keep goals out. And I think they showed on Monday night that they are prone to making a lot of errors, and defensive confusions at the back, and obviously very uncharacteristic error from Sophie Bagley today that led to Frank Kirby's second of the afternoon, that amazing lob chip thing. And they made a lot of mistakes that made life easier for Chelsea. I think they could have been better at making life difficult and then therefore making life easier for themselves, but they, every single time they had possession, they gave it away quite quickly, and Ebony Salmon was very isolated up top. There were a few cases in the first half where the ball got to her, but she was just instantly surrounded by a number of Chelsea players and kind of stuck out on the right or left-hand side of the pitch and was looking for help. But by that point, by the time the Bristol City players had kind of caught up to the moment, it was too late, and there were so many Chelsea players to win the ball back. And then Chelsea would just spring on the attack so quickly, and so many of Chelsea's moves, the 4 assists that Fran Kirby got today, were kind of copycat, really, with a move going down the right or left-hand side, probably normally linked up by Jessie Fleming or Gura Wrighton, that then ends up with Fran Kirby playing a simple ball across the box that Kerr could then tap in. And I think it just shows, I guess, the movement from Chelsea, the space that they create, the way that they pass the ball was exceptional today. And, you know, that shone through, and the clinicism, if that is a word, of the way that they finish their opportunities. Sam Kerr as well, with 15 goals now for the season. She was exceptional today, as was Fran Kirby. And yeah, I think deserved winners, and this is, you know, the first stop on what could be a big season.
Yeah, it's funny. I kind of thought Bristol might have, if Chelsea had pressed really high and managed to contain but suck in Chelsea on a press, I kind of imagine, and maybe this is where your Bristol might do well and hope was coming from, was that if Bristol could attack quick on the counter-attack when Chelsea had been sucked in, you know, if John Anderson pushes forward, if Aaron Cuthbert had started and Aaron Cuthbert was leading a high press, you know, Sam Kerr's leading that press, you thought maybe that would happen. But obviously Emma Hayes very astutely chose to mix the team up and have Ingle and Leupolz carry the ball. Fleming and Wrighton, like we said, were fantastic. Kirby was really playing as a team. And I think you really saw Chelsea, they didn't let kind of pass tactics get to them, and you saw how adaptable Emma Hayes is and what makes her a great manager. Quick plug for Jesse JPH. I feel like we're gonna be doing a lot of plug in this podcast. They have a new podcast with Alex Ibasita and Abdullah called Box to Box WSL. really fantastical listen. Get really in depth on the WSL and tactics and UEFA Women's Champions League as well. I know they've done a new preview for that, so really worth a listen if you want to go into that next level of tactical awareness and discussion. Flo, are you going to say something?
No, I just wanted to talk about the Fran Kerr. Oh, there we go. Superhero, super merge. Sam Kerr celebration. She brought out the backflip today for her second goal, something she hasn't done yet at Chelsea until now. And when I interviewed her for BBC Sport towards the end of last year, she talked about the fact that she kind of got bored of doing the backflip and it just become expected of her and it was kind of boring and she no longer found it fun. So it'd been something that she'd been waiting to do, I guess, for a really long time in a special moment. And cup final definitely feels like the right time. Shame no fans were there, but the backflip got a very good reaction from the bench. I mean, it felt like there was a massive crowd in there because
like
they
an extra
were
goal.
Like,
it was like an
yeah,
extra
they
goal
were hooting
scored.
And hollering at that backflip. They loved it. Emma Hayes, though, she was not impressed and she ranked it a 4.0. She said the landing was a bit sloppy.
Out of 10.
Yeah, someone, I can't remember who it was. I think it was Molly McElwee from The Telegraph who said that, it, you know, was that worrying for you as a manager to see one of your best players doing a backflip? And Emma Hayes said, yeah, I was a bit disappointed because they thought it was a bit of a sloppy landing. I would only give that a 4.0. But I also want to talk about the Mara Mielde injury, which
absolutely
was so horrific. And I saw that someone put in our sort of shout out for questions a note on that as well. And it was really strange because Amy Palmer got a yellow card for the challenge on her. I haven't yet seen a replay, but it didn't look that bad. And I think it was just a bit of a freak incident where Mielde kind of twists her knee in a really awful way. And she was screaming the place down. Like, you could just hear the echoes screaming. It was horrible. And she was rolling around on the floor. And you kind of
on
knew
the broadcast
in that moment it
wasn't
even,
looking
you could
hear good. It, yeah.
Yeah, and they stretched her off and she's gone straight to hospital, Emma Hayes said. And yeah, it really affected the team. They were quite shocked about it. Giro Wrighton was in tears. Fran Kirby was in tears. Everyone sort of had to be consoled afterwards. And Fran Kirby took Mara Mielde's shirt up to the trophy presentation and had it for the celebrations in the changing room afterwards. And Emma Hayes talked about how Mielde is the mother hen of the group, and she's 31 now. I think she recently signed a contract extension to 2023. She's such a huge part of that team, has been very important this season, especially the penalties she scored. And a couple of years ago she missed a big chunk of the season through injury and managed to come back. Soph Lawson and I were talking about this today, to score the winner against PSG in the Champions League. And Chelsea really missed her that season, and I really am wondering how much this will impact their season, because you saw today that it was really tough to take that injury. Hannah Blundell, exceptional backup option at right back. If there's anyone you would be comfortable with putting in, it would be her. She did it for that whole season that Mielda was absent. But at the same time, she's just a big character and she's so versatile as well that, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Chelsea bounce back from that. And I just hope that it's not a really bad injury. Obviously, we're yet to find out. It didn't look good, but fingers crossed, perhaps it's not as bad as first looked.
I think already looking back on this final, which is kind of a weird thing to say on the day of it, but I feel like in a few years, the thing that I will remember is Frank Kirby bringing out Mielda's shirt in the celebrations. And that image I thought was very emotional, like just from watching it. Yeah. That was
really emotional.
That was really affecting at home. I found myself kind of falling into pieces watching that bit and seeing, like you said, the players get emotional. And yeah, I think you're right. I'm sure the atmosphere in the press box and from the players was pretty eerie in those last 15 minutes or whatever, kind of became completely superfluous and unnecessary because everyone's hearts and feelings and energy and goodness was kind of being channeled out to Mielda wherever she was heading off to. So yeah, it did add a painful note to the final. But like I said, I think that image of togetherness in the squad and amongst the players was really beautiful and is kind of what I'll take away from it. You know, this fabulous team and all the things they do. Kind of moving to Bristol, Flo, just pivoting a little bit. Maternity Matt Beard's done an amazing job. I love seeing Bristol City fans kind of taking in the final. It's great to be there. It's a shame they weren't in it for longer than sort of 90 seconds to some extent. But they did have a huge result on Monday night, arguably one of the games of the season, beating Reading 3-2, going out of the relegation zone. Maternity Matt Beard pushing his old club back down to bottom. Flo, kind of being in there today, looking at Matt Beard, looking at the players, how do you think they will regroup for what is a huge remainder of the WSL season that is going to really define them, you know, potentially over the next few years as a club? Do you think this will knock them back a little bit morale-wise, or do you feel like you saw something that makes you think this relegation fight is on and they're ready to keep going as they were?
I think they're ready because of the reaction from Matt Beard, which was the right reaction to say, look, you know, this was almost a bonus to be here, to be able to get to the final and have this. This was not the priority of our season, and we still have that target we need to achieve, and we will continue to go towards that goal. So I don't think they're going to dwell on it. I really don't think they will, and I hope they don't, because really I completely agree with them. I think looking back on this season, if they survive and get to a cup final, that's one hell of a season given where they started and the context of what Tanya Oxby inherited at the start of the season and then what Matt Beard took on. A team so low on confidence, lots of departures, lots of changes. Even in January, they had some players leave and some players arrive. And what they managed to do purely, I think, with spirit in some ways, they've really just been able to harness what they have and make the most of it. I think they'll still take that on and carry it with them. I really hope so. I don't think they will think about this for too long. And I think they'll think, right, okay, fine. Yeah, done. Now let's move on.
And players like Kira Skeels, I know who's on loan, but like to play in a cup final at 18 or whatever is amazing. Amazing experience.
Yeah,
I think
Matt Beard was talking about Naomi Lazel that came on. I only just turned 17 recently. And yeah, she came on and got an appearance. And yeah, there's a lot of potential in that team. I noticed someone asked us about Ebony Salmon and where we think she might be heading
to. Yeah, let's jump to that.
It's an interesting one. I think, you know, it wasn't Ebony Salmon's sort of game today. I think, you know, the result doesn't really reflect her performance because, she, like I said at the start, she was isolated when Chelsea... when Bristol City did get the ball, when Chelsea were dominating the game, and then in the last sort of 10-15 minutes when Chelsea had taken off their front three and she had more room to play with, she created opportunities. And if she'd had the whole 90 minutes to do that, I think she probably would have got a goal across the whole game. But where she goes to next is a really interesting one. Someone did ask Matt Beard where, you know, are they thinking about, how do they think about, how are they going to keep Ebony Salmon? Sorry, I phrased that quite confusingly. But yeah, about where Ebony Salmon might be next. And Matt Beard kind of, you know, it's not, I guess, the right time for him to be thinking about that. And it's sort of not his player as well, because you know, it's probably Tanya Oxby's responsibility a bit more. I don't know where she fits best. I mean, maybe in Everton. I think she's, you know, pushing up to the next level. I don't think necessarily she fits in an Arsenal, Chelsea or City. And perhaps it is weird for her to go back to Man United, where she never made a senior appearance, I don't think. So I don't know if she'd want to go back into that environment, but maybe she would. I think she might fit at United. Obviously, they're going to lose Preston Heath most. Oh, no, they might not, actually, because they didn't get their allotted player slot. So maybe Heath and Press could be staying. But I'm feeling in Everton. How about you?
Well, it's funny. I think the Man United thing is funny because I think Ebony Sam and Ashna, who asked the question, was talking about like tactics. And I think Ebony fits Casey Stoney's model so well. I think Man United for me is the best fit in the WSL. But I do, like you, think, I don't know if she would go back there. So I'm going to kind of twist the question a little bit and actually put international in there. So I actually think from an NWSL perspective, and anyone who's in the secret SB Nation Slack channel will know that I've been pushing this idea in there for about 3 or 4 months. I think the Chicago Red Stars. I hope Sam Kerr left her Chicago Red Stars contacts with Ebony Salmon at the end of the game today. Get Ebony Salmon to the Chicago Red Stars, who are a really, really good team. Sam Kerr obviously used to play for them. They've gone to 2 NWSL finals, lost both of them. An NWSL final, a Challenge Cup final. And I really think Ebony Salmon would suit them perfectly and would just be the last little thing they need to go and win a title in the NWSL. And I'm really pushing that.
I think that's a massive opportunity. And I think more England players especially, should be taking that plunge. And I would love to see her go to NWSL. Absolutely love that. I think that, yeah, I'm here for it.
Yeah, and I think Ebony's going to have an interesting moment right now because she's going to want to keep scoring goals. She's going to want to keep getting minutes. She's just getting into the England side. So this next transfer is going to be really tricky to get right, or even stay at Bristol if she thinks that's the best case for her to becoming an England regular. You know, Euro 2022 next year, she's got to be in that squad. She just has to be. So I think she doesn't want to go to a club that's too big.
Yeah, and we also look at what's going on with Zola Babajide at the moment, which I think should be a bit of a kind of eye-opener for Ebony Salmon's situation, because if Bristol City were to be relegated, you definitely think she shouldn't stay, because you don't want to get in a situation where Zola Babajide is now, where she's currently being put into the under-21s, is not playing. They rejected her transfer request. She signed a contract extension last summer, which runs until this summer, which I just think was a big mistake. And obviously she, you know, probably thought that the club was going to get promoted and she was going to be a huge part of that. And that kind of unraveled quite quickly at the start of the season. I hope Ebony Salmon sees that and probably thinks, right, that's maybe not what I want to do. Because at that point when Babajide signed that contract extension, she was a big part of England's future plans. And she was in that November camp. I think she might be in the camp before and then hasn't been picked since and isn't playing for Liverpool either. And a really crappy situation for her and, you know, everyone at Liverpool right now. So I think that is
more on Liverpool later. But
yeah, that's a warning. That's definitely a warning shot, I think, for Ebony Salmon to think about, right, you know, she needs to go somewhere where she's going to get played. She's still young, but she needs to be playing. And obviously United, that didn't happen. So that's what I worry if she went to United again, is she's going to get in that cycle again of not being a starter.
Quick bit of kind of finishing off the cup final, finishing off some Bristol City chat. Huge shout out to the Bristol City Vixen cast, a podcast we really recommend. If you want to go more in depth on Bristol City, DM and Shahan are amazing. I really loved their last episode. They were at Ashton Gate at that Bristol City 3 Reading 2 match, which included a quintessential Ebony Salmon winner, which just really, really makes both of us smile. And yeah, if you want to, our schedule doesn't always...
From Charlie Wellings is unreal for that Salmon goal. Just ridiculous.
You can't see it, but Flo has fire emojis in her eyes as she looks at me on the Zoom. So yeah, sometimes, you know, we don't get to cover the games. We wish we could cover it all. Sometimes our schedules get busy. This week has been really emotionally draining. We're both spread a little more thin than normal. So we're trying to keep on these Sundays and we'll try and do Wednesdays. But if it doesn't work out, we wish we could cover every match, and it's a shame that Bristol City Reading was actually maybe the game of the season and it was at Ashton Gate, which is really great. But like I said, go listen to Bristol City Vixen cast. They do a great job from the stadium as well, which is some great anecdotes about what was going on behind the scenes. And likewise, from a Chelsea perspective today, Fran Kirby's Fight Club Mariam and Andre do an amazing job every week going deep on that. And I haven't heard their episode yet, but I'm sure they're we'll be picking out some great stuff from the cup final today. So Flo, moving on to a couple of quick things before we get out of here on this kind of cup final special. There was a game in the WSL. There's also a game midweek in the WSL. Reading 0, Spurs 0 was today. Thankfully, neither of us... I watched a tiny bit of it during the halftime of Durham-Leicester, but I didn't really want to get too involved.
Yeah, I dodged a bullet really there on that one.
Dread to Reading and Spurs, but possibly true. And also during the week, I did watch this one. Everton kind of dismantled Birmingham. It was, maybe that's a bit harsh. Birmingham were all right, but woof, Everton looked good once they got going, including Heli Rasso, maybe with my assist of the season. Just unbelievable for that opening goal. Anything you want to say on there before we move on?
Yeah, nothing from me on the weekend. Yeah, sounds like Reading Spurs was a bit of a drab one. So
yeah, I mean, I the only two things I want to shout out this game, like I said, I watched about 10 minutes during the halftime of Durham-Leicester before switching back to the Championship. Rhian Skinner was on a run of four losses. She stopped that. So I think it's a big point for Spurs. Their second clean sheet of the season. You know, I do think they can get a lot of credit from this. Reading are a good side. Reading beat them 3-1 last season at the Majewski. So I do think this is an improvement when you look at different, you know, every club has different goals, have different standards. So I think Spurs will take a lot from this game. Siri Vorm, first start of the year, 2021. So giving a shout out to that. And at right back, Esther Morgan, youth product, really making an impact at Spurs. Yes. Coming through. Great to see her getting another second start in a row. So that's kind of my little roundup. Maybe a little Spurs heavy. But I thought that was good to see. And I think, you know, a lot of people have mentioned it this week, so we don't need to go into it. But Jill Scott, what a season she's having. That Everton performance midweek, I think, made a lot of us kind of in the women's football community, which, you know, we're always welcoming people in, come be a part of the discussion. Yeah, what it's done to put her back in an Everton shirt has been kind of mad, because between you and me, Flo, I kind of thought she was readying to be a coach or retirement. It just felt like she was at a totally different part of her career, and now she's, you know, back to her best in a weird way. And so finishing up, dropping down to the Championship, Flo, this was the game of the season we'd all been waiting for. And, you know, more or less it did deliver. Durham 0, Leicester 2. Leicester now go 3 points clear with a game in hand and better goal difference. Flo, it really looks like Leicester are going to be in the WSL next season.
Yeah, I think, I can't remember if I said on this podcast about the lockdown party breaking, rule breaking, and whether that might derail their season a little bit, because I think it did cause a bit of a rift in the camp. But it doesn't seem to have done. I think Durham are so organised offensively, have a fantastic spirit, which I think is what a lot of people kind of praise them for and is something that they're very proud of. But I think the game today and performances against the bigger sides have shown that they sometimes do struggle to offer something going forward once they've kind of nullified that attacking threat. And perhaps today was just almost a prime example of that, like almost a step too far on their journey this season. And maybe next year the focus is really, right, how are we going to, in those moments where we've done so well defensively, then push on and get those match-winning moments. But yeah, credit to Leicester. They do, you know, they've invested in their team and they do deserve to go up, and it'll be very exciting to see them in the WSL next season.
Yeah, I mean, Leicester are a phenomenal side. We've been saying that all year. They've been so good to watch, and it feels like for the family club that have kind of taken it seriously and gone pro, they're really doing it, you know, the right way, if there is such a thing. That's kind of a horrible phrase, which obviously helps if you have a Premier League men's team. But yeah, that being said, this was a really tough game for them. And I think in a way I came out of it, it was a really good game of football, especially the first 45 minutes. And I think I came out of it thinking, you know, Durham aren't going to go up this season. It looks like it's all sewn up now. But if there is a second right way to do it, it is the Durham way. And they are coached so well. And it, to see 11 players all in tune with one another and working so hard, it was a real joy to watch. And we know how good Leicester can be. And they didn't have a single shot on target in that first half. And I think Durham deserves so much credit. They did play, I kind of put it on Twitter, a bruising style of football, which I think is going to get you into problems. I really love Lauren Briggs. She is such a tough player to play against. Robson as well in the middle. They both picked up bookings after 46 minutes or whatever. And you kind of felt like they were just going to make sure Leicester couldn't get any rhythm, couldn't get any space. If there was a counter-attack brewing, You know, they didn't let LaShante Paul get in space. They didn't let Remy Allen after she came on. Sorry, Remy Allen went off. Tash Flint came on, who's, you know, one of the best players in the league, as one was player of the month last year. Didn't give her any time and space. They were just kind of hacking Leicester down before attacks could develop. And yeah, you felt like maybe Durham could make that work for 90 minutes. And I think they'll be really disappointed that both goals came from set pieces. Ironically, Sam Tierney hadn't scored for Leicester this season. Then she scores twice, two off two set pieces, where she finds a bit of space and gets to tap volley in the first one and head in the second. So I think Durham will be disappointed the way it happened. But to keep Leicester quiet for 45 minutes and to be honest, outwork them, be the first to every ball, you know, that takes a lot. And so I think Durham will come away from this game with a head held high. Yes, it was their first loss of the season. The unbeaten record's gone. They're not going to get promoted. Like, that will hurt. But the state of these players and the club, I think, is really rich. And I think it was a great spectacle for the FA Women's Championship that just delivered. Like I said, that first 45 minutes was full of life.
Yeah, and I think what's fantastic about Durham is the sustainability of the club. And I think I almost want that to be rewarded. And I want them and other projects like London City Lionesses, who are doing a massive sustainable effort to not be lent to a men's side and try and create a sustainable, successful team. I'd love to see that get some credit and get some rewards. And, you know, I hope that next season maybe Durham can push and get that WSL sport and then get a license off the back of it.
No, totally. You're right. I mean, we got to celebrate these clubs. Yeah, Coventry United, London City Lionesses, Durham, that are doing things slightly differently as well. And I'm going to be interested to see if Durham players, their heads turn and they might fancy going somewhere else. Feels like Bridget Galloway and Beth Heppel are kind of like Durham staples. Maybe I'm speaking ahead of myself, but I think they might stay, who have been a big part of the goals. But yeah, Lauren Briggs, I really think, could step up. Siliki and Hill today were fantastic at the back. Obviously, like, Durham had to do a lot of defending, at least to try and kind of snuff out chances. They really shone as well. So maybe you could see them going up into the WSL. But like you said, if they can hold on to these players, it feels like the core is there. Quick roundup around the rest of the championship. Obviously, that game I watched kind of start to finish. I really didn't want to take my eyes off it. I wanted to give it my full attention, listener. It wasn't one of these four stream weekends this weekend. It was really just one game on. Give yourself over to it. Make some notes.
I think I prefer that. No offense to mega stream Sundays, but it is nice to have just a bit of a chill one where you can really dive, you know, deep into a game and watch a full 90 minutes without having to constantly try and rewind on the FA player because you missed a goal while making a cup of tea, which is kind of how I spend most of my life.
Yeah, especially with some of the championship sides where, like, you know, I have the players I like, especially I've watched Leicester a lot more this year and Lewis, but watching Durham and really getting to see, like, Lauren Briggs kind of just dominate a game, look like a totally, you know, sometimes just the player, best player on the pitch, I was like, oh, this is great to have that new experience with a player you're kind of just learning. So I totally agree. I kind of wish, you know, it's hard in women's football when you're trying to find these kind of, I love all the games are available to stream. I love that there's like a moment on Sundays where there's all these games going on. There's a real hubbub. But as someone that wants to go that next level of analysis, yeah, you're trying to find your space. Rest of the way around the women's championship, Blackburn lost 3-0 at home to Lewis. Imi Umeton cannot stop scoring. Oh my, Lewis absolutely loving the goals at the moment. First time they scored three this year. Flo, picking up on the Liverpool stuff, since Rizona Balibajide was excommunicated from Liverpool's first team, they can't stop winning. 5-0 today over Coventry.
Yeah, I suppose that's the way to look at it. I think the fixture list has been kind to them, though, in that time frame.
That's
as
fair.
Well.
London Bees and Coventry in that time, yeah.
They still haven't announced their new manager. I think the process has ended now, so they should be on the next stage, I guess, interviews and whatever. But yeah, hashtag free Rinzola.
No, obviously free Rinzola. We're team Rinzola, but kind of, yeah, maybe a little bit of justification there if you're part of the Liverpool corporate
it's
team.
Also, I mean, I was talking about this, it just makes no sense to me. This has happened with our team, QPR, as well, towards the end of last year. Is exactly, you're cutting off your nose to spite your face because it's a lose-lose situation for both sides. So, you know, even if they don't necessarily want to be there, if you're not going to let them go, then play them, make the most of that contract. And if you're not going to play them, then let them go. It makes no sense for them to reject those offers in January. It's just unnecessary. So anyway,
final result, Sheffield got a good win over Charlton to put them continue their kind of fine season. I think Sheffield definitely have promotion kind of hopefuls. Really, really good side. Next season I think they'll be one of the favorites, but they're still fourth in the table, just behind Liverpool now, who have been on this really, really good run, just goal difference edging that. Lewis up into sixth, looking really, really good, same amount of points as London City with a game in hand. And Coventry, London Bees, just back at the bottom. 10 points for Coventry, 8 points for London Bees. London Bees now 5 losses in a row. There was some good reporting going on, more shout-outs. Really highly recommend Katie Wyatt's article about Huddersfield Town, who have declined to spend the money to get a license to play in the FA Women's Championship due to a lack of funds. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with the FA Women's Championship next year, who comes down, who goes up, if it stays the same, if they try and maybe move to a 12-team league. You know, we don't really know right now. Obviously, the FA Women's Cup is coming back next month, so we'll see more National League football going on, and maybe we'll see a sign of who's going to kind of step up and maybe put the money in and see what teams like Leicester are doing. But Flo, I think that's everything for the Sunday episode, unless you've got anything else you want to chuck in there.
No, I hope that's been a nice little succinct, not too long little whistle-stop tour on what was a pretty crazy final in many ways.
Yeah, it's funny. It was kind of a very memorable final, if not necessarily the most competitive 90 minutes in a weird way.
Yeah.
Well, look, Flo, I feel privileged to know you, be related to you, have you come straight from the match to us with some great anecdotes about the wonderful world of the Women's Football Mafia. So thank you, at least from one listener.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right, we'll let you get out of here, listener. You can follow us on Twitter at RelativelyFoot, Instagram RelativelyFootball, where I'm doing lots of silly stuff often. And if you fancy emailing us, that's RelativelyFootball@gmail.com.
Also, hey, shout out you and your new job. Tell people about your new job and new content they can find you at.
Yeah, well, I... Flo. I just started
a new
job.
Well, you're always giving me love, so now it's the shoe's on the other foot, my friend.
I am no longer with Dynamo Theory, and I've got a new job, and they're paying me money to do football stuff. Woo! Which is really exciting.
That is the dream. That's all anyone can ever ask for, to be honest.
Pay your writers, pay your content creators if you were a higher up suit out there. That's all I'm going to say. Yeah, I'm going to be working for The Striker, which is a new media company covering Texas football, soccer, high school, college, professional, men's, women. And yeah, I'm working for them, covering Houston Dash and a couple of other bits as well. So yeah, if you are interested in Texas soccer, come talk to me. It is a subscription service, kind of like The Athletic, about $50 a year or whatever. But you can get a 30-day free trial. And yeah, it's going to be the best place for paying writers and content creators to talk and make videos and podcasts about Texas soccer at all the levels. So come find me there. Like I said, it's exciting to be covering the game we love. And yeah, trying to make a living and put a roof over your head doing it. So yeah, I feel in a really privileged position, and I'm very thankful, and thanks for the shout out, Flo. I wouldn't be here without you, to be honest. You're my one of my biggest inspirations, and someone who has been so helpful at skill sharing, and yeah, that's what it's about.
Wow, thank you, that's very kind.
The love is real. We'll finally let you get out of here, listener, and yeah, we'll hopefully maybe speak midweek or next Sunday at the very, very latest. All the best. We'll be right back.